Welcome to another instalment of the Evolution Exchange podcast. Today I'm joined by Yonah Ambrosi, Ricardo Pietri and Nicholas Camateros to discuss supporting developers with DevOps methodologies and security implementation. Before we delve deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some introductions. So Yonah, would you like to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. All right. So thank you very much. Here goes my intro. So I was born in Romania in a kind of a bit of a cosmopolitan family with, you know, Romanian, Hungarian, Bulgarian roots, amongst others. I was born in communism and then, you know, kind of grew up in capitalism. And now I'm more of a social democrat. Spent quite some time in the countryside growing up. I had an early interest in how things work to the occasional exasperation of my dad. Went on to study maths and computer science. And, you know, a bit more related to the conversation today, I started my security career working as a systems engineer, and then later on I transitioned to doing offensive security for a Big Four consultancy, and then I moved permanently, or at least for the time being, to helping out with defense. So my first defense job was for a Dutch bank. I worked for them for a bit more than a year, and then I transitioned to Spotify, who also brought me here to Sweden. This was happening a bit more than 5 years ago. And in March 2022, I joined the Volvo Cars, where I lead the security function in the commercial digital organization, which is the commercial, the software or the digital arm of the commercial organization, and has roughly 1,500 people, out of which roughly half are engineers. Yeah, that's pretty much me. Happy to discuss anything you find particularly interesting for my CV. I'm going to pass it on for now.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Ricardo, would you like to introduce yourself next?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Abby. So, hi, everybody. My name is Ricardo Pietri, and I work as VP of Engineering Security at Threadledger. It's a fintech SME that provides lending as a service platforms to financial institutions such as banks. I currently work very closely with the infrastructure team, hence why I'm here. I also oversee security and compliance, and I also manage the IT function for the company. I like to think that I still have a technical background, given my studies and my first jobs. But in the last few years, I've leaned more towards management, hence my current job. Let's say that when I do my job well, I serve as an API between the business and the techies. Yeah, that's me. So thanks for having me here.
Amazing. Lovely. And last but not least, Nicholas.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Nicholas Camateros, and I work as a DevOps engineer and Scrum Master at Telenor Sweden, which is one of the bigger or biggest telecom companies in Sweden. I've been working there for a little over a year. And before that, I studied computer science at the Royal Institute of Technology here in Stockholm, where I'm also based with my girlfriend and a daughter. And before joining Telenor, I worked actually also at Spotify for a while during my studies as a student ambassador project leader. And then after that, I joined the startup for a brief while and then joined Telenor. And at Telenor, I work in a team of around 7 people. We work closely together with several other teams with the network managed systems. So we work, or what we do is we host an environment for a big project in regards to 5G, where other developers work. It's kind of like a private cloud thingy going on. That's why I'm here today.
Amazing, lovely.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, a Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading-edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are 3 reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Now that we know you all a bit better, we will get stuck into the questions that you've all prepared. So, as usual, we'll make our way around the room, sharing your questions and thoughts about our topic of supporting developers with DevOps methodologies and security implementation. So, first up is your question, Yonah, and you ask, how do you build trust and foster harmonious and efficient working relationships with product teams? So, tell us a bit more about your question.
Thank you. My hypothesis here was that in order for, you know, the teams we're working with or, you know, the company to be able to deliver robust software, everyone needs to feel that they're in the same team and work together towards the same goals. And of course, you know, this kind of goes for all the roles in a team or in a company, be it like software engineering folks or project managers or engineering managers, user experience, and any other role we might have. So I'm curious, you know, what your approach is to kind of foster this environment and be able to like kind of reap the benefits, so to speak.
Yeah, interesting question. I think it's a hard question to answer as well. But my gist is that I think communication is key, and I think it's really important to make sure that there's room for open and transparent communication. And when talking about leaders in product teams, I think it's important to be able to listen more than you speak, to be able to let team members be the driving force behind decision making as well, because I think that it's really important for a product team to involve the actual developers early on in the decision making, so that they feel that they own the product and that they can be a part of shaping how you structure the work moving forward. So it's not like a leader saying, I think this, do this, so that all the people are involved from the beginning. I think that's a really good way to increase collaboration and like involvement throughout the team, so to make sure that everyone's involved and not just parts of the team.
Oh, thank you. What were you thinking, Ricardo?
So I do share what Nicola is saying, especially when you get the techies and, you know, product people in the same room. Sometimes the techie, and I think I was guilty of that, or still am guilty of that when I wear the tech hat, we kind of like to think that we have all the answers, right? So sometimes there's a bit of clash between the engineer thinking, oh, we are so smart, we know everything. Why is product saying this silly thing, right? But I can say there have been multiple occasions where, let's say myself and my team, the engineering team, were just focusing on how to solve a hard problem using, you know, engineering tools and processes. But then someone from the product team just thought outside the box, said, well, you know, instead of doing this very difficult part, why don't we just create a new screen, a new tab or something else, so completely approaching the problem from a totally different perspective. So for the engineers, it was about demonstrating that we could solve the very hard problem. But the product person instead was, let's just rephrase the problem in a different manner. So I think the lesson or the tip that I would give to any team, especially in this case for the techies, just give a chance to product to show what they know and that they can think about the problems. They're not the smartest person in the room, probably anyway, right? So that's one thing, which I think is very much in line to what Nicholas was saying. And the other one would be like no blame in general. So, you know, pointing fingers is quite easy when things go wrong, especially in stressful environments. So what I think what's easy to see is when you do, if you do retrospectives or postmortems after an incident, right, it's really easy to see even just what people write, if they mention names, if they mention specific teams. So obviously you want to solve problems, you want to learn from it, and you know, lessons learned, that, so you have to be specific what you're going to do next to avoid the problem, right? But if you start pinpointing things, then people are going to feel attacked and you cannot build trust, right, in that case, whereby instead if you make mistakes, and everybody does, right? And you see that other people are extra nice to you, right? Then I think it's much more easy to build that circle of trust, because it always goes two ways. So yeah, those are my takes on this.
Cool, interesting. I would definitely like to learn more about the work setup or the, I guess, company culture, because I heard you talk about, you know, product teams and engineering teams, and it feels like, you know, there's a bit of a divide there. I like to aim for an environment where, like, you know, everyone is part of the same team, whatever the role they have. But I understand that, you know, it's not always the case, and sometimes, you know, folks prefer to keep on the side and kind of, you know, have some sort of monopoly over the interface, and there's not much you can do to change those things and just adapt. I think, you know, a couple of other things I wanted to add that were kind of, I find valuable to learn and like see how they work, is to, you know, try to set clear expectations and have alignment, and then ask for feedback. You know, see if folks think that you're, you know, when you're representing a domain or a function, see if folks find, you know, you and your approach and what you stand for useful and valuable. And if not, why not? And, you know, something that's also like particularly important to me is be able to show that you're available. When, you know, folks do kind of exercise that option, show up and help out. Just a couple of notes I took. But yeah, thank you very much. Very valuable insights.
Yeah, and I would just like to add to what Ricardo was talking about. Like, when something that I've been using throughout, like, school and my career, even before Telenor, is I try to picture what the other person is picturing. So you have people understand things differently. So it's really important to see where they are coming from, usually. That gets a better understanding on a problem. And as you were talking about, Ricardo, with like product people and engineers doesn't necessarily think the same way on a problem, I think it's a really good way to make the other party understand how they're viewing something and explain why they're thinking the way they are. That's pretty good in my opinion.
Yeah, sounds good.
Nice. Has anyone got any other follow-up questions or statements they want to say to that?
I can ask a question to the guys. How would you suggest getting feedback? You know, going back to what Jonathan was saying, is you do that privately, for example, after a meeting, or how, any suggestion how to get feedback about how I do my job or how my team does their job, right? How would you suggest and recommend doing that?
Yeah, that can be difficult to get people to give you feedback. I think it's really important to foster an environment where people feel safe to give feedback and to make sure that the feedback is constructive and not, I don't like when people talk about negative feedback. I like to talk about constructive feedback, because there's no good way of delivering something negative. It's better to say something constructive, what they can work upon. And in my experience in regards to teams, I think it's different for different team members. Some of them want to talk just one-to-one. You can get a lot of good feedback there. But some people just want to write something anonymously or in a big group. They're completely fine with that. But I think it's important to cater to the different people's needs to get the best kind of feedback from people. That's something I'm thinking about.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. What I was thinking when you asked the question was that, yeah, I mean, there's different types of feedback, right? Like, you know, there's formal asks, you know, maybe you have some sort of, I don't know, performance cycle or stuff like that. You know, the effectiveness of which, you know, is a leave for another episode. There's also, every interaction is an opportunity to get feedback, right? So, you know, the fact that someone does or doesn't do something, or does something but not what you expected, or is, you know, is their way of communicating that you know, either your comms weren't clear enough, or that, you know, they don't agree with that something needs to be done, or that something is has the same priority that you think it does. So yeah, other than, you know, kind of, I guess, you know, this goes more onto what Niklas was saying in the previous question about listening. So, you know, making sure you always kind of read through the lines and kind of understand. And I guess in real life, it's a bit more, a bit easier, because you can, you know, feel other dimensions of, you know, what the other person is telling you. But yeah, I find that, you know, it's very important to kind of try to get a sense of not just what one person is saying, but also how they're saying and what they're doing. And it's, of course, it's very tempting to kind of assume that, you know, they have, you know, they don't like, you know, what you told them or whatever. And I guess this goes more to, you know, aligns with what, again, Niklas said earlier about trying to see what the other person is seeing and understand, you know, why they might be doing different things than what you think they should be doing. And yeah, of course, you know, there's all kinds of other mechanisms, you know, like developer surveys or yeah, with different different aspects. But yeah, these are my main ones, I guess.
Lovely. Well, we'll move on to the second question then, and that was yours, Niklas. And you asked, what are some misconceptions about integrating security into DevOps and how can they be dispelled? So tell us a bit more about your question.
Yeah, so I asked this mainly because I get the feeling throughout IT companies that security is something other people are concerned with, not developers per se. Like there's a security team, they handle security and not like everyone, because the best security is where everyone's concerned with security. And I think I was just asking these questions because I wanted to see your expectations on security and integrating that into DevOps, and like what your experience is with trying to integrate stuff security-wise in DevOps.
I don't mind going first. I have a bit of a hot take there, just to, you know, maybe spice up the conversation. Playing devil's advocate here. So I think you're referring as well to, you know, security is everybody's job, right? Which is something that whoever works in the industry has heard or seen multiple times. I used to love that. I don't think I do anymore. I don't know which part of the circle or the, you know, the journey I am at the moment. And I'll tell you why. So I think everybody needs to have some basic understanding of security, despite of the job, and it does increase a bit with the type of job. So for example, doing the same information security training, the same one across developers and marketing, I think is not tailored enough because they do different things, right? And I can dive more into this into that. But I think there is it's a kind of a double-edged sword to say the security is everybody's job, because it means and it comes with the fact that then everybody needs to pay a lot of attention to security. And I think that there is one bad consequence of that, which is to add a lot of responsibilities to the users. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. I think one like a big creed I have about security is that security needs to become transparent and to remove, you know, to basically set in the background and you don't have to care about it, right? So, because if it becomes a hinder to velocity of what you're doing during the day, people are going to get around it. You know, think about the meme with the gate in the middle of the park. You know, I see everyone has been walking around it, or then you rely too much onto that. So the classic thing about people clicking links, right? And we say, oh, you shouldn't be clicking links. It's my job. It's everybody's job to click links, right? So if we get hacked because we're clicking the link, I don't think the problem is the person clicking the link. The problem is how comes the email got in the first place? How comes the browser did the, you know, DNS request get resolved properly? How comes the firewall didn't stop it? How comes the firewall didn't stop it, right? So many other things. So when I say security is everybody's job, I think we need to draw the line at the bottom, though, to put it down. It needs to be a low bar. So it's like, what about finance? I know you know how to send in an invoice to get a refund, but do you know how to write all the Excel function that your CFO does? No. Are you required? No, right? So I think we need to be careful with it. I see what people meant originally, but I'm very concerned that if let, you know, unguarded, and you know, people might rely on it too much and not, and then blame the users instead of doing everything else we can do as techies, especially to help them. So it's a bit of a hot take. Hope you guys are not going to be too angry about that.
No, I totally get where you're coming from, and I feel the same way in some regards. But I was thinking not in a in that of a broad sense as users, or more focused towards developers in the DevOps cycle. Like a lot of developers are, since they are, as you said, techies, most developers know quite a lot about security. But a lot of them still seem to think that security is someone else's job. So I want to like focus the question more towards developers and the DevOps cycle in regards to security, because some people feel like security hinders innovation in their development job, or if you get me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Jon, maybe I'll let you talk. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You know, if you want to focus or scope it down to, you know, developers and, you know, conversation about, you know, software engineering and security, I imagine what you're referring to is, you know, maybe caused by a lack of expectation setting and alignment and, misaligned incentives. So what I mean by that is, you know, maybe not clear expectation and lack of alignment is, you know, what is your, you know, the approach to security in that environment, and how has that been developed and how has that been communicated? Is, you know, is there agreement on all sides that, you know, these are the things that are relevant to do, and is there a clear understanding of why, and, you know, what happens if they're not done, and so on and so forth. And then in terms of misaligned incentives, you know, if you're not making sure that, you know, people are rewarded for doing what you expect them to do, they're going to go and focus on what they're incentivized to do, and makes sense, right? I mean, and it's a, you know, multi-party game, and there's quite some few players, and it's kind of, you know, not so straightforward to estimate the outcome of this game, I guess.
True, but yeah. I agree.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, what I try to do is, you know, work with my coworkers, you know, get input from you know, folks that are responsible for, you know, driving the technical, you know, strategy, get input from the people who are responsible for executing on it, feedback from product people. Sometimes even from user experience, though that's a bit more complicated, always has been, but, and yeah, make sure that, you know, their voices are heard, and, always try to relate initiatives and, any sort of work to something larger, something that's, you know, kind of, cascading from the, you know, company or department priorities. Otherwise, if you just reach out to people and, you know, try to convince them to do something else, even if they're interested in security, if they can't, you know, justify why they're doing that, or, you know, they can't use that to grow internally or show value to their managers, to their stakeholders, it's kind of difficult, even if they do want to help you. So yeah, these are my main ideas here.
It's a difficult question. Security is a big, it's a big blob, to say the least.
Yeah, but why? That's why, you know, they need people to help them out and do the work.
Do you think it's a matter of priorities? For example, let's say you work in sprints and you don't have enough time to solve, you know, that item that was in the backlog about that library that no one is giving love to, so we keep importing it, and, you know, passes a few tests, we mute it some other times. Is that what you're referring to, like getting, you know, buy-in from product managers and the business to make sure that security is important as part of, as equally, if not more, because every website says security is number one, right, apparently. how do we make it actually number one in the sprint?
Good question. I was thinking,
No, go, please.
No, I was thinking like a lot of times in regards to security, you have like a library or something in your development cycle that you have used for, let's say, a couple of sprints. And then all of a sudden, someone from security comes in and like, oh, you can't use that one because they have so many vulnerabilities. And I'd like to be able to catch that before security comes in. And that's where I think DevOps or security inside of DevOps comes in, because then it's a natural cycle and you can find those issues earlier in the cycle, which mitigates the problems quite a bit. So you don't have to spend that much time using something that's insecure and spend a lot of time on something that you won't be able to use. Yeah, I don't know.
I was thinking, to your comment, how do we make it, the number one priority? I don't think it should be the number one priority. But it should be, fairly weighted between other competing priorities. That specific case, absolutely, they should have time to deal with, security debt, just as they have time to deal with tech debt, other tech debts. Have access to tooling and to maybe even, frameworks that are being, administered and updated by folks who are mindful about the, context switching and developer experience and all of these things. Now, of course, your mileage may vary depending on how much, investment you can afford to do in this area, but I think the main line is I don't think we should just use security as an argument. I think that's not helping anyone, because security,
Thank you for your inputs.
Nice. Any other comments or questions on that one before we move on? Lovely. And Ricardo, your question is up last. And you asked, do you hold any unpopular opinions about DevSecOps, and what makes you confident in your perspective, even if it differs from the majority? So tell us a bit more about your question.
Thanks. Yes. So I've got a bit of a story here, just to introduce the context. So the story is about compliance, not about DevSecOps. And so I don't bias your responses, right? So you probably remember the days where we all had to change our passwords every few months, right? Companies that didn't require their employees to update the passwords every 3 months or 12 months were often seen as, not taking security seriously. I'm doing air quotes here, right? So, but watching my colleagues who pick their passwords by just adding a new digit, or increasing the sequential number at the end of the password, or adding the digits of the new year or something trivial like that, I never really liked the idea of, regular password changes. But back then, my stance wasn't very popular. 10 years ago, my first stint in doing security stuff, I had to go head to head with all the auditors, most of the clients, and sometimes even some of my colleagues, right? Because I thought that switching password regularly was just a bit pointless. Now, fast forward to today, it turns out that I might have been onto something back then, because as you know, nowadays, most big players, all the standards, even PCI DSS, the latest version, no longer advocate for the endless cycle of this password dancing change, right? So circling back, what's your contrarian view on DevSecOps?
Yeah, interesting story. I've been thinking about that as well, like adding a digit. A lot of people seem to do that. I think it's easy for people to focus on, in just not DevSecOps, but DevOps as well. Like when they are thinking about concepts like that, they focus on implementing tools and processes rather than starting with addressing like cultural and organizational issues. And I have a bit of a hard time labeling myself as a DevOps engineer, Because I think DevOps is not like, it's more of a way of work than something you do. And I think it's something that everyone should, like, it's a cycle, how you, a workflow, basically. And I think that's something you have to focus on. I think it's important to not just make checkbox from security. it's a shared responsibility, as we talked about earlier. But it's a hard question. But I think it's easy to focus on tools and processes rather than like the shift and change, addressing cultural and organizational changes that's needed for it to work properly. I'd say that.
Thank you. How about you, Yanel?
Yeah. Well, so I'm not entirely sure what you mean when you say misconception, but your story reminded me of this quite good article. I think it was from some of the folks who worked a bit on Azure AD and like all of these centralized authentication platforms of Microsoft. I think the blog post was called "Your Password Doesn't Matter." And the gist of it was, trying to think up of different threat scenarios and how, irrespective of your password strength, the way attackers, pretty much attackers can compromise your account, irrespective of how secure your password is. On a different, line of thought, I'm happy we don't have to rotate passwords on a frequent basis. Depending on your definition of misconceptions, I noted down some potential misalignments. For example,
just an unpopular opinion, something that where you say say, "Are you really sure you're not? I don't think you're right." Everybody else does it differently, right?
So some ideas, whatever approach works for a company doesn't necessarily work for others. Vulnerability inbox zero is a pipe dream. A lot of security tools are not made for software engineers. There's quite a few of them. I was kind of relating your example with what you said earlier about what was it? You had an example earlier about I have a big of a hard time remembering. I'll think about it and I'll come back later.
Nicholas, what were you saying as well? I think is that you were really spot on. At least this is something that as well I think about quite often, and I think it might be unpopular right now. So the team I currently lead is called DevSecOps, but I found hard time to call it that way, so much so that our handles on Slack are at cloud instead, right? Our conference space is infra, right? So there's no really DevSecOps when we talk to each other. And I do agree with you that it's more about like a framework, a mindset, the way of working instead of a real title, right? And I like that. I almost want to bring it to the extreme where I don't think, let me take a step back. I feel like I'm giving a lot of hot takes, so I don't want to be taken as an extremist in this field. But there's been a lot of like, we need the ops and the devs to work, very well together, to go for beers, hug each other when they push code and all that kind of stuff, right? I'm not sure. I mean, in a well old machine, if you have a very good ops and a very good dev team, and you've made sure that APIs in between them, going back to that, and the tools that support them, if they're configured correctly, I kind of want my ops team to be not necessary for a lot of work that the devs need to do. If you do a deployment and you need your ops team to stick around in case things go bad, or because they can't even deploy the underlying infrastructure, you're probably doing something wrong. So I kind of want my team to become, not necessary, and them to focus on more interesting things, right? So this DevOps thing is just, for me, is a very well-performing API instead of being one single monolith, right? Where I have in the same, stand-up meeting, the ops and the devs together. So I don't know if this is something that resonates with you guys as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's really interesting. I agree on a lot of things you're saying. Definitely.
I think I managed to remember what I wanted to say earlier. It was your example about the phishing emails. Where I was going earlier was pet project of mine is to challenge my colleagues doing phishing simulation on the effectiveness of their campaigns. On a high level, I kind of feel that in terms of outcomes, it would be more beneficial if we double down on, forcing two-factor authentication and enabling, better detections and reporting mechanisms into whatever email clients and or web interfaces that our teams might be using.
I was just thinking about in regards to your example, Ricardo, talking about changing passwords. Do you have any thoughts about passkeys that seem to be getting implemented more and more? That seems to be a good way around it, right?
I love them. I'm trying to roll them out so much so that gradually, again, I'm not disclosing anything confidential, but the main accounts, the admin accounts at the moment using Google as the IDP for us, they're all protected by those instead of just F2FA. And we have MFA across every single user, SSO, all that, love that. And then we have a password manager for the things that are not SSOs, right? But we haven't tried, and the password manager that we use, which I'm not going to mention in case, also supports passkeys, right? And I do love that, because probably you guys know, passkey stays on your device, on the different devices, actually, right? But it kind of further decreases a lot of stuff, but we can talk more about passkeys for us. But yes, you should go for them. I love what Fido, the Fido Alliance is doing. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for your input.
Lovely. Well, we do have some time left if you guys have any other follow-up questions or statements that you want to throw out there. So does anyone have any questions for the group before we do wrap up? A few thinking faces.
Yeah, exactly. I think there were a lot of interesting discussions, and it's when you talk to people from different companies like this, you get a wider range of perspectives, and that's really good. Because as I was talking about earlier, you see things differently. This pinpoints that quite good. You get a lot of different perspectives. So really interesting and super nice to meet everyone.
Yeah, it was fun.
I feel the same.
Let's do this again.
Nice. Well, we'll leave this episode one then, I guess, here. I just want to thank you all, Ricardo, Jonas, and Nicholas, for joining me on this particular episode. If you are listening in and you want to get involved in one of our upcoming episodes, do reach out to me on LinkedIn or by email at abby.stokes@evolution-nordics.com.